The American Psychological Association today will be voting on a contentious measure to once again allow psychologists to work at Guantanamo Bay and other detention facilities. The APA prohibited its members from working at such places in 2015 after the release of what became known as the Hoffman Report, commissioned by the APA Board of Directors. The report was an investigation into the American Psychological Association's practices regarding its relaxing of ethical standards for psychologists involved in torture interrogations of detainees. Supporters of APA members returning back to detention facilities say that psychologists would not be allowed to participate in interrogations, but would be there only to provide mental health services to detainees and military personnel. Opponents say the APA members should not be involved and that instead only independent psychologists should be deployed to such sites. The vote is scheduled to take place today at the APA's meeting in San Francisco. Joining us to discuss his opposition to the measure is Dan Albers, an instructor of psychology at Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado, member of APA Watch, and co-author of the APA's membership referendum, the policy that removes psychologists from Guantanamo and CIA dark sites. Dan Albers, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what led to the APA members being prohibited from working at Guantanamo?
In 2008, a number of us came together to petition the APA to put the issue of whether or not psychologists should be involved in Guantanamo, the black sites, and indeed any illegal site before the membership of the APA. And that vote had a stunning result. We won by 59 to 41%. It was a landslide. And this is the first time in APA history that a vote had gone directly to the membership.
And so what happened in 2015?
Well, to talk about what happened in 2015, we have to first talk about what happened in the intervening years. So the ban on psychologists participating in places like Guantanamo Bay, unless they're working directly for the detainee or for a human rights organization. So there are some exceptions to this rule. It was slow-walked by the APA for years. For 7 years, it was APA policy, but policy they refused to meaningfully implement. But in 2015, there was a bombshell of a report we call the Hoffman Report, that revealed that all of this resistance that we had been receiving was happening at the behest of the Department of Defense, that the APA's ethics office had colluded with the Department of Defense to make sure that our policy did not go out of the boundaries that the Department of Defense wanted.
And what about the controversy with the Hoffman Report?
So the Hoffman Report gave us what we needed to be able to pass a meaningful implementation. So we made it clear that from now on, when the U.S. says it does not torture, but the UN says it is that the U.S. is in violation of the Convention Against Torture, we will defer to the UN. It also makes it clear that psychologists cannot directly participate in national security interrogations. And a number of people who did not come off well in the Hoffman Report are not happy about it. And so there is a move to remove the Hoffman Report from the website, which I think would be a terrible idea. It would serve to censor this independent report.
And so what's happening right now with this new bill being introduced?
With this new bill that goes by the inelegant name of 35B would return psychologists to offer therapy to the prisoners at Guantanamo. We want to have independent psychologists with expertise in torture rehabilitation to be able to go in. And so the upshot of current APA policy is to allow psychologists to work for the victim, but not the victimizer. And we think if we can get torture rehabilitators into Guantanamo, the detainees are going to be much better off.
So today the APA is set to vote on 35B. That would still prohibit psychologists from being involved in interrogation, but they would be able to provide for prisoners and military personnel.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that?
Well, one, we think that it's going to be the thin edge of a wedge to get back into the interrogation business. We know this because the bill's own supporters say as much. So certainly the president of the Division for Military Psychology has said that both we should both have military psychologists offering therapy and we should be involved in interrogations, because to do otherwise is to restrict free trade. And in that case, he thinks that it is wrong that we have banned a setting. Thinks that the APA should only prevent certain actions, but not prevent people from working in different settings.
Right now, there is no obligation for psychologists to go to Guantanamo, but after this bill would be passed, you would be obligated to go. How would that work? How are psychologists sent to Guantanamo?
I mean, what's really astounding, I mean, you know, and it's such a great question, because at the time that we passed it, the deployment to Guantanamo was voluntary. Why some people want to get in is beyond me.
Of military psychologists.
Why the military psychologists would want to serve there is really beyond me. Why they time and time again want to associate the name of our profession with that prison is beyond me. Time and time again, we know that when the psychologists have been involved in places like Guantanamo, we have seen abuses. We've seen abuses because the psychologists first brought the torture techniques to Guantanamo. We know that the clinicians who worked there offered diagnoses that were systematically biased in a way that did not, as to not reveal evidence of torture. And this is a great concern. Guantanamo is an inherently offensive place. It is a place whose name is synonymous with torture. Our profession should have nothing to do with it at all.
And how would independent psychologists be any different?
Independent psychologists would not be beholden to the chain of command. They would not be expected to be able to deliver diagnoses that would that serve the interests of our legal defenses of torture. And indeed, if we can get the right ones in there, they might even have the correct cultural competence, because we know that a number of the detainees have to speak through an interpreter. And we know at least at some time in the past, the same interpreters were used both in interrogations and in therapy sessions.
And going back to the bill, part of the argument for it is that there's an obligation to care for the people who are in the facilities. Isn't there an obligation that a psychologist be present?
We absolutely think that the mental health of the detainees needs to be taken care of. But this in some ways goes back to your earlier question. We really want people who have an expertise in torture rehabilitation. We do not want people who are thinking that they're going to be offering therapy to an enemy, but psychologists who really see these men as torture victims and are going to be using appropriate protocols. We want therapists who are able to speak the language, who understand the culture of the detainee. We want therapists who answer to human rights organizations and not to the military chain of command.
And how likely is that to happen?
I remain optimistic. I think it's quite possible if the APA would devote a quarter of the amount of time it devotes to lobbying Congress for more money as it does to lobbying to get independent psychologists into Guantanamo. I think independent psychologists would be inside Guantanamo.
So what's next in terms of the vote? How does that work?
We understand that they're going to be voting today. There are approximately 160 members who will be in the room. We understand that there will be a floor debate followed by a direct vote. And if any of your listeners are psychologists, I would urge them to look up their representative on council to get a hold of whoever might represent them and ask them to vote against 35B and 13D.
And what time is the vote?
We don't have a specific time yet, possibly as late as 2:30.
And 13D?
13D is a bill that would remove the Hoffman Report from the APA website.
Dan Albers, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Dan Albers, member of APA Watch and co-author of the APA's membership referendum, the policy that removes psychologists from Guantanamo and CIA dark sites. Up next, we'll hear a differing point of view on the American Psychological Association's vote today. Dr. Mark Stahl is a retired military psychologist who works as an independent consultant and is the current president of the Society for Military Psychology and Division 19 of the American Psychological Association. So, Mark Stahl, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
You're absolutely welcome.
So, we just spoke with Dan Albers of APA Watch and the co-author of the APA's membership referendum, the policy that removed psychologists from Guantanamo Bay and other CIA dark sites, who opposes this 35B. And he says that putting APA members back into such places as Guantanamo Bay is a bad idea. What's your response to that?
Well, what the measure, MBI 35B, that the Council of Representatives within the APA are going to be addressing really is to return military psychologists to facilities that are legal and lawful facilities as deemed so by U.S. law, and really just to provide mental health care to detainees. So what I would say is that is both the right thing to do. It's also consistent with U.S. law and U.S. policy, and it's consistent with international treaties, specifically Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. So the detaining power in that instance has both the authority but also the requirement to provide all medical care for those that are underneath their custody, right? So detainees, to include those at Guantanamo Bay, would be included in that. And so it's not just the right thing to do to provide that service, but it's legally what we're supposed to do.
And what about those who say, well, Guantanamo is essentially illegal by international law because of the indefinite detention without trial? Do you agree with that?
So I mean the U.S. Supreme Court ruled on that issue specifically, right? And you can look at Hamdi versus Rumsfeld. And because there is a requirement for habeas corpus, and I'm not a lawyer or attorney, but I understand that was part of the issue there, that basically there's a requirement for folks to have a writ for their case to be heard and seen. But the U.S. Supreme Court determined that the U.S. military has that right, that the situation in Guantanamo Bay is not illegal, nor is it somehow in not keeping with the U.N. charter that we've agreed to.
And what about the Hoffman Report that APA members asked to have done that essentially said that torture was happening at Guantanamo? What do you think about the Hoffman Report, and do you believe that it's valid?
Sure. So the Hoffman Report did not say that that torture was happening in Guantanamo Bay. The Hoffman Report, in essence, Hoffman, along with seven other attorneys from the Sidley Austin law firm out of Chicago, were commissioned by the APA's board of directors to look into claims that there was some sort of collusion or inappropriate coordination between APA officials and officials within the Department of Defense, and that that collusion or the, that coordination by allegation was that that DOD officials were pressuring APA officials to shape ethics policies so that they would not restrict the DOD any more than they already did when it came to the issue of interrogation in detention. It did not, and Hoffman's report does not conclude. In fact, it specifically, in Hoffman, in his outbrief to the APA in 2015, stated he did not find that any of that collusion in his wording resulted in the abuse or misuse or torture of any detainees at any detention facilities, right? What Hoffman's report said was, again, using his language, that there was collusion between DOD officials and APA officials to not restrict military psychologists or Department of Defense psychologists any more than the law and their ethics code already did in terms of how they could conduct themselves in those facilities. But that issue, I should emphasize, is not what is under consideration by the APA's Council of Representatives. The only issue there is just whether or not military psychologists should be allowed to go back to support the mental health care, the medical care that they are required to by law and by international treaty under the Geneva Conventions, Common Article 3, or not, right? And the 2015 policy decision really put military psychologists between a rock and a hard place because, again, by U.S. law, as ruled by the Supreme Court and really conventional international treaty a la the Geneva Conventions, Common Article 3, military psychologists must provide mental health, medical type care to all those under U.S. detention. And so by changing the policy, you know, military psychologists in essence have to decide, well, should I follow the law and do what I think is the right thing, provide a service to really a vulnerable population, or not, and refuse to provide that service?
Well, opponents of the bill also say that it would be better to have independent psychologists, particularly those who specialize in torture rehabilitation, assigned to Guantanamo. Would it not be better to have independent psychologists there solely that are concerned about the care of the patient?
I'm probably not in a great position to assess whether or not that would be better. The reality is the detaining power, okay, so in that case the U.S. government, has a requirement to provide that care for those detainees. And so, think about what that would look like, I suppose. Let's kind of think that through. So the U.S. military would hire these people, or the detainees would hire these folks. Well, what happens if a detainee doesn't have the finances to hire them, right? I mean, then is it kind of left to those individuals to say, I voluntarily will go to Cuba on demand to provide a service? I mean, I suppose that kind of thing can be entertained, but at that point, the military is going to say, hey, we have to care for these folks. We have to make sure that the medical and mental health care that they're receiving is up to the highest standards possible. So that means they're going to have to review the credentials of those individuals, potentially credential them as though they were practicing medical care or mental health care in their facilities. And to do so, I'm sure that would come under great scrutiny and say, oh, well, you know, the military is trying to control those individuals. I mean, the military and the Department of Defense, and let me caveat, I should have started up front, I don't speak for the Department of Defense. I'm not a member of the Department of Defense. But just looking at this as an experienced observer, the Department of Defense would then be responsible for all those individuals in the facilities, even if they're working on behalf of the detainees. It becomes a very impractical sort of solution. And because they have to guarantee the availability of medical care and mental health care, that means that, you know, if somebody didn't want to help the detainees, the military is still on the hook to do that, right? I mean, it doesn't pass the pale from my perspective.
Well, would a detainee be able to differentiate between a psychologist providing mental health care and a psychologist who might be there to gather information about them to help their captors?
Sure. So, again, the psychologists that are being considered under 35B, which is the motion in front of the Council of Representatives, are only those that are there to provide health care, right? So I mean, you could create a fabrication of story about anybody that would sit in front of a physician or a nurse that would come in and provide treatment or care to a detainee who's sick. Could they do something nefarious? Sure, right? I mean, people break the law all the time, but the reality is that would be an illegal act, right? I mean, that individual would be, you know, maybe lose their license to practice. They would be have to be reported. I mean, that kind of behavior is already prohibited. It's always been prohibited. I think when folks hear things like psychologists torturing, that sounds horrible, and it should sound horrible, right? I mean, I've never seen someone tortured, and if I ever did or suspected someone to be misusing their influence or power, you know, I think my professional colleagues would report folks immediately. And so everybody's against torture. And unfortunately, some very good things that were happening to help people got swept up in a broad brush and with scary kind of fear-mongering language like torture. And so that's really unfortunate because nobody wants people to be abused or mistreated. Nobody wants folks to be violating law or to not be respecting international treaty. But the tragic story in all this was a very misguided report, low on facts and high on innuendo and accusation, resulted in an overreaction from the society to close off opportunities for the detainees and for the U.S. government, and in doing so have also potentially infringed on some free trade practices for psychologists that do this sort of work. And now we're simply trying to do the right thing by regaining ground that is morally defensible, righteous ground to hold. And I certainly hope that the APA does the right thing and reverses a little bit of its course that was an overreaction.
Well, thank you, Mark Saul, for speaking with me today.
Hey, thank you, Janine, very much.
That was Dr. Mark Saul, a retired military psychologist and current president of the Society for Military Psychology and Division 19 of the American Psychological Association. The APA votes today in San Francisco on whether its members will be returning back to detention facilities such as Guantanamo Bay.